Welcome to Unlapped as we look ahead to the Australian Grand Prix. The world of F1 continues to dominate the headlines. Let's get to it. Katie George, Lawrence Edmondson, no Nate Saunders. He's still getting settled back from Jeddah. I think he's on a hot date tonight, Lawrence, and that he just couldn't rearrange to jump in with us. Is that the case?
Well, the guy does a couple of Sports Center hits, and then it seems like, you know, he forgets about the little people, right? And so, yeah, he has better options on the table tonight, clearly. So, yeah, not
clearly. We'll have to remember where he came from. Okay, we'll have to make sure that we remind him of that. You remember, if you're watching or listening, to hit us with a like on YouTube, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, please hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, I'm going to start with a rumor, some rumblings of a possible shift, which would, I think, rock the F1 community and world. Adrian Newey could possibly, allegedly, the rumor mill is spinning, okay? So none of this is actually fact yet, but I just want to go down this rabbit hole of the possibility of Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull to go to Ferrari. Could you foresee that happening, Laz?
So this is another spin-off from this story that has dominated Formula One since the start of the season, which is essentially about Christian Horner's future. Now, we won't get bogged down with everything that happened over the Bahrain weekend other than to say he was cleared of these allegations. But since then, it's quite clear that there's been a power struggle at Red Bull. How closely it's tied to that whole investigation, we don't really yet know. None of that has been made public. But what it does seem to be the case is that clearly there's some people at Red Bull that want one thing and other people that want another. And only very few people have gone on the record about this. So Jos Verstappen is pretty much the only one who said, I want Christian Horner out of the team. But of course, Jos isn't part of the team. But then there are other key players in the Red Bull hierarchy. And of course, Adrian Newey is right up there near the top because even though he's a very modest guy and he probably wouldn't like someone saying this, he is the brains of the operation. He is the head of the technical team. And where this story's come from is that all this infighting at Red Bull may mean that Christian is looking to have, and this is all based on other people's reporting, this is not stuff that I've been able to verify, but so the story goes that perhaps Adrian would leave the team because, or go and work solely on their hypercar, because the way F1's cost cap is structured, you have three places at the very top of the cost cap, which are not part of the cost cap. So sorry, I'll rephrase that. You have three people within the company who are not part of the cost cap because they're the highest paid within the company. So clearly Adrian is going to be one of those. He is worth, I would say he's worth his weight in gold when it comes to car design. Yeah. But if you free up that up, then perhaps, you know, you can have someone else come in. And, you know, if there is this infighting at the top and Christian, you know, and Adrian have fallen out, again, not something which I've been able to verify at all, but this is the theory. So I think, you know, like I've said, I feel like I say this a lot on this podcast right now, we should treat it with caution. You know, Adrian is clearly, you know, he has been quite happy in recent years at Red Bull. There was a period when he kind of moved away from F1 design a little bit because he wanted to focus on other things. And I think he was getting a little bit tired of the fact that when they had a Renault engine, they were struggling to compete no matter what, how good the chassis was. But now, obviously, they're winning. And while it is definitely a team game and he's not the only person designing the car, not the only person involved in its success, clearly some of his ideas that he's had around essentially the suspension and how to create this really solid aero platform to really work the underside of the car, that's been key to their success. And Adrian, we know, has been, you know, heavily involved in that since the start of 2022 in these regulations. But, you know, whether he as well wants a new challenge at some point, it remains to be seen. But it creates a great headline, doesn't it? So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But until we get it a little bit more confirmed or until we can verify it with some of our sources, I'd say do treat it with a bit of caution.
Yeah, if you don't know Newey or are not familiar with the name, he's the guy who literally wrote the book on building F1 cars. He's won 12 constructor championships with three different teams. And his understanding, as Laz just alluded to, of aerodynamics is pretty mythical. I mean, he's one of the most intelligent, if not the most intelligent person in Formula One right now. If he were to make a move to Ferrari down the road, What would that partnership with Lewis Hamilton look like? And could that be the key to Lewis winning a record-breaking eighth world championship?
I think it absolutely could be. I think Lewis may win an eighth championship regardless of where Adrian ends up. But absolutely, if he were to go to Ferrari, it would significantly strengthen that team. Whether it would be next year along a similar time that Lewis went, you know, I think he'd struggle to have any impact on that year's car. Mm-hmm. But then in 2026, there's a regulation change. And really what you want in 2025 is the best brains in Formula One working together in a room, looking at the technical regulations, finding the loopholes, finding the areas where the most performance can be gained. And if you had Adrian Newey in that room, I think you'd be at a distinct advantage. But as you said, you know, it's still very much speculation at this stage. But in the same way that anyone or any team would, you know, as to use a quote from Toto Wolff actually in Saudi Arabia, do backflips to get someone like Max Verstappen in the car, or I guess you could say the same about Lewis Hamilton in the car. And the same applies to the very best technical directors and the very best engineers. Sure. And there's no doubt that Adrian Newey is one of those. And also his understanding of ground effect aerodynamics, which have been so key under the current regulation cycle, is expected to continue into next regulation cycle, albeit with some changes to make these cars a little bit more manageable. His understanding of that is clearly very, very good. And his ability to, you know, highlight areas for then other people within his team to exploit and find maximum performance from is on a level that clearly is higher than everyone else, because Red Bull have started this regulation cycle so well and continue to find performance.
Would you say they're whispers, or are they louder than whispers at this point?
To me, the whispers. I wasn't in the paddock in Saudi Arabia, and clearly, like, these things come about. And I think as soon as there was talk of this unrest right at the top of Red Bull, then I remember seeing, you know, people just making that connection. Well, if one side of Red Bull is unhappy with the other, then perhaps, you know, what if Adrian Newey is the person that kind of comes out of this and decides to go somewhere else? And also, there was a little bit of speculation even before we knew about the Christian stuff and we were focusing on Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari. You know, there was a little bit of speculation around then as well, because Adrian had said previously that Lewis was one of the drivers he would have loved to have worked with. Funny enough, Lewis's first car that he tested was a 2004 McLaren. So it was actually an Adrian Newey car, but he's never raced an Adrian Newey car. I'm sure, you know, that would interest Lewis as well. So these rumors are always going around. And as long as, you know, engineers or drivers or anybody else in the sport have contracts that are either coming to an end or have exit clauses, most of which do one way or another, there's always this speculation ongoing as to who's going to end up where. So my experience in F1 has been never rule anything out. But at the moment, I think we're still at whisper stage, if we're going to take it seriously as well.
It's going to be fascinating to watch it all play out. And then are we at a point where, you know, years from now, we look back to the start of the 2024 season and think of it as a time that Red Bull kind of crumbled before our eyes after what has been a phenomenal run? I don't know. Now, do they right the ship and get everybody back on track and, you know, thinking the same way? That's absolutely a possibility. But right now, it just kind of seems like we're at the precipice of something big happening with Red Bull. Let's focus on Saudi Arabia real quick, because it's Ollie's world and we're just living in it, Laz. I was unbelievably impressed by Ollie Bearman, who finished P7. He was driver of the day in Jeddah. What a performance. He filled in, obviously, for Carlos Sainz, who had an appendectomy from appendicitis. So he was out the car and they had to call in the young gun. And at 18 years old, wow. I mean, that was so impressive.
It was hugely impressive. And I think it was what made it so impressive was that he came in at just such late notice.
Yeah.
So most people making their F1 debut, first of all, they don't make it with Ferrari. That's very rare. The last time, I think, was 1972 that a driver made their debut with Ferrari. So that's a huge amount of pressure. Then usually you get at least a day and a half of testing in that year's current car, pre-season testing. And then you get at least three practice sessions before your first qualifying session. Ollie had one practice session, part of which was red flagged because Zhou Guanyu went into the wall, a reminder of how difficult that circuit is. And he'd done, the longest stint he had done prior to the race was 9 consecutive laps. And that was them like just trying to say, Ollie, go out there, get a feel for it, you know, tell us what you think and let's see how you manage the tyres and we'll try and extrapolate that into the race. So when you consider all of that, finishing 7th, getting points on his F1 debut is remarkable. And I'd like also to say that I did an interview with him just before this podcast, which is something I'm going to write up. And it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. He's actually genuinely lovely, like really engaging 18-year-old, let's not forget, very young. And another remarkable fact about Ollie Bearman, which I only found out, is that he speaks Italian, at least good enough Italian to get by. He's got pretty good German, so language is a strength of his. I think he said a little bit of French, but most impressive to me was Latin. He speaks some Latin as well. I mean,
speak Latin?
Well, in some
now schools, you're just showing off.
In some schools in the UK, it's considered kind of almost compulsory. But he went to a grammar school in near Chelmsford, where he grew up, and Latin was on the curriculum, it seems, and he speaks a little bit of Latin. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's anything Ollie Bearman can't do.
That's pretty impressive. Maybe more impressive than what we saw in Saudi Arabia. For those who don't know Ollie Bearman, where is he now? Who does he currently race for? And what does a performance like that do to the trajectory of a career?
So Ollie Bearman has been part of the Ferrari Driver Academy since 2021. Mm-hmm. He was racing in Formula 4 around that time in Germany and Italy. And it was actually the Italian Federation, Motorsport Federation, that put him forward to basically take part in this shootout day at Maranello, where they had a bunch of young drivers go there and whoever impresses the most on track, but also off track in terms of, you know, how they are physically and mentally as well, got offered a place in the Ferrari Driver Academy. So I think that's when he came onto most people's radar. Of course, he did all the go-karting that goes before and all that kind of stuff. And no doubt there would have been people that had spotted him at a very early age being quite exceptional. And then last year he was in Formula 2. And this year he's in Formula 2 again, and he drives for the Prema team alongside another name, which we have mentioned a couple of times on this podcast on previous episodes, and that's Andrea Kimi Antonelli, who anyone who has followed the saga of who's going to end up in Lewis Hamilton's seat next year may recognize that name as well, because he's the Mercedes young driver who is tipped for very, very big things, and rightly so as well. He has an astonishing junior career. A bit like Ollie Bearman, you know. So those two are actually teammates in Formula 2 this year, which I think is going to be fascinating to see where they end up and how they go. It's Antonelli's first year in the series. Bearman was in F2 last year, won 4 races and, you know, looked good. And it was just a case of, like, can he polish the edges now and put himself in a position to make himself marketable to an F1 team?
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you look at the current contracts of current drivers on the grid, there's a handful that don't have secure contracts moving past the 2024 season. Let's not forget about the job Liam Lawson did when Daniel Ricciardo broke his hand when he came back for AlphaTauri to drive. When you look at Antonelli, Bearman, and Liam Lawson, Is there a high percentage chance that we could see one of those three kind of young guys take a seat moving forward?
I think you can make very good cases for all three making it into F1. Let's start with Ollie Bearman, man of the moment. The obvious route in is with Haas. So he did a couple of FP1 sessions, one in Mexico and one in Abu Dhabi. And the FIA have actually set regulations whereby teams have to hand over first practice sessions to a driver with less than two races experience, basically to give these young guys a chance to get in a car and you know, show teams
more experience in nine laps going into a Grand Prix.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that track time is all important. And there's a limit to what you can do in a single practice session, but it definitely helps and it puts them on everyone's radar. So he's already done that with Haas. He's got to do some more of those with Haas this year. I'm not entirely sure on the figure, but it sounds like it's going to be quite a few. And so I think that puts him as a key contender for a Haas seat going into next year. Of course, we know that Ferrari's lineup is set. That's Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. So no space there unless something very unusual happens. But Haas would be an obvious place. And Nico Hülkenberg, Kevin Magnussen, you know, two drivers that Haas have actually brought back from, you know, I don't mean they would have said they were retired at the time, but from what could have been the end of their careers. So those two guys have really got to impress to either remain there or perhaps move somewhere else, you know, if something opens up. But equally, if you've got a young talent like Ollie Bearman, and of course those links between Ferrari and Haas, be it with the engine supply deal, and then also they supply, you know, suspension and a whole bunch of other stuff. The design office or the aero office of Haas is based in Maranello, separate from Ferrari, but you know, they're just so connected, those two teams, that it would make a lot of sense for Bearman to join with Haas. So that looks very possible. And I think, you know, off the back of what he did in Saudi Arabia and the expectations of what he can do in F2, I think he's going to put forward an incredibly strong case for that seat, to the point that I think I'd be very surprised if he doesn't get it now. And I know he's got 0 points in F2 at the moment. He's actually got more points in F1. He's got 6 points in F1, zero in F2. But he was on pole in Saudi Arabia before he got the call up for Ferrari. So he was going to start the feature race on pole. He was going to start the sprint race from 10th because they have this reverse grid system. And I think he would have performed really well there. So yeah, that's a big shout for Bearman to make the step up next year, as long as you know, things go relatively smoothly in F2. Then Antonelli, you know, we talked about before, of course, there's that Mercedes option. If not, there could be a Williams option. So I think both of those are very, very possible. Antonelli hasn't had the perfect start to F2, but we saw, maybe even with like Piastri, we saw like his first half of the year in F2, he was kind of still finding his feet a bit. And then it was the second half where he really accelerated. So if Antonelli, you know, we're only two rounds in, but if Antonelli can do something similar, I think he's going to put forward a very, very strong case. And I feel like he's destined to be in F1 eventually anyway, whether it's a second year in F2 next year. I don't think that's really going to, you know, hold him back that much. I think he'll still make it there eventually. And then Lawson, yeah, great shout as well. You know, a guy who I think a lot of people felt could have been on this year's grid. And we know that Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki Tsunoda, you know, if those guys aren't seen as the future for Red Bull, what's the point in keeping them hanging around? We could bring in Lawson. Then who knows what's happening with Max? I mean, we just talk about Newey going somewhere else. Well, of course, there's all the rumors about Max going somewhere else. We discussed those on one of our last podcasts. So yeah, clearly there could be movement within the Red Bull system that allows Lawson in. So it's a really strong group of drivers in Formula 2 and outside of F1 at the moment. And I think after having no rookies this year, I think next year you can expect to have at least two or three on the grid.
I'm glad you mentioned Haas, because they've had a pretty good start to the year. Obviously, just before preseason, Gunther Steiner and Gene Haas, they parted ways. That was sad. Gunther Steiner is obviously a friend to the pod and an unbelievably charismatic personality. But what do you think of Haas's start overall so far?
On Gunther, he was actually doing German TV in Bahrain, so couldn't stay away. Remember, he was saying like, "Oh, I'm not that worried about not going to Bahrain. Yeah, I won't miss it." Couldn't stay away. There he was.
He's probably too bored.
Yeah. So I think we'll see Gunther around and about, and seem relatively happy in that role. But you're right, Haas have made a better start than everyone thought they were going to make. They've made good starts to seasons previously. You know, 2022 was very good at the start of this regulation set. They did a pretty strong start. So it's not unheard of for them, but I think it's more relative to where everyone thought they were going to be. But it also shows you how tight that group of bottom five teams are, mm-hmm. which at the moment are Haas, RB, Williams, Sauber, and Alpine. And I think, you know, with Alpine significantly underperforming, there's opportunities for other teams. So so Haas, yeah, being up there and being a contender, it just shows you how tight that is and how a good qualifying performance, we know how good Nico Hülkenberg is at those, can make a big difference. And now they have a car that doesn't just completely destroy its tires in a race. They can race a bit as well. So yeah, pretty impressive.
When you look at the top half, since you just mentioned the bottom half, when you look at the top half, we felt like maybe Mercedes would have a better showing in Jeddah after Bahrain, certainly. Is Ferrari, though, the clear-cut favorite or clear-cut second team on the grid as compared to Mercedes and McLaren at this point in time?
Yeah, I'd say so. Absolutely. I think Mercedes were disappointing in Saudi, the high-speed corners, of which there are many in Saudi Arabia and quite a few in Australia, where we're going next as well. They just couldn't compete with the likes of McLaren, Ferrari, and Red Bull. So first sector of the lap, they were like 0.4 seconds down, you know, in one sector, which is really not very good. They made it up a bit in sectors two and three. The car was very good in the straight line. So clearly they weren't running as big a rear wing and as much downforce as some of their rivals, but it still wasn't, yeah, it just wasn't the performance that we kind of thought Mercedes might be able to produce. So I'd say at the moment, yeah, look, Ferrari, clearly the second best team. Leclerc made that quite obvious by finishing a pretty comfortable third place, even got the fastest lap on the final lap. And then, Ollie Bearman finished in seventh, which I think, by the way, was a respectable performance, even in a car that was as good as that, because it is close behind Red Bull. You know, we say Ferrari is the clear best, but it is still quite close. So, yeah, with the limited practice he had and everything going into it, I think even a seventh place finish is pretty solid for a Ferrari. So, yeah, that does seem to be the order. Ferrari, then Mercedes, McLaren, Aston Martin when Fernando Alonso is involved. But yeah, they also seem to be struggling a little bit in the race. But on Bearman, I just to underline this point, I'm trying to think what I was doing when I was 18 years old. And it was basically my A-levels, which is, I don't know what the graduation version is from a US high school, but like, I can't imagine that. No. And also that amount of fame you get overnight just by doing like this one sporting event. I mean, it's crazy.
And the fame you'd get overnight because it was with Ferrari. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, Liam Lawson was awesome last season when he came in, and we were all incredibly impressed with what he was able to do in a short amount of time. But that's with a team like AlphaTauri, VCarb, whatever. This is with Ferrari. Like, it's a completely different level. And I just thought he was very calm. I mean, he's being hunted down by Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton, like, yeah. Two of the fastest guys on the grid. Like, I can't imagine how nerve-wracking that is, and to be able to put it to the finish, get points. It was really fun to watch in a race that you knew Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez were going to finish 1-2. Like, that was a great storyline.
I guess you must see a bit of it in like college sports in the US, where you have like these star players who all of a sudden at that age are thrust into the limelight a little bit. But I guess the difference, they're not then going up against, like, you know, NFL LeBron. Veterans. Yeah. Well, yeah,
like I think you see it in college where a true freshman comes in and, you know, overly hyped or incredibly hyped, and you expect them to be a great player, but you just don't know if it's going to transition, you know, that quickly as a freshman. And some people who come in and they completely take over and become stars, like that's so much fun. But again, that's a dime a dozen, right? It doesn't happen all that often that you see it, especially at the professional level either. So I just thought it was a very fun part of the race for what was dominated again by Red Bull, and I'm sure we'll continue to look. We're looking through for the silver linings, people. Okay,
you can say it was a dull race. You know, I think we're at the stage now, however many races into Max domination we are, that we can admit that some of them are not that exciting. But hopefully, we've got some better ones to come.
I hope so. Okay, I want to play a game here. I don't know if you dabble with the stock market or not, but through two races of this season, I want to analyze driver's value. Okay. Is their stock up? Is their stock down? It's early, but early returns. Okay. Let's start with Sergio Perez.
I would say it's ever so slightly up, but it's okay. It's in one of those stock markets where all shares are rising like dramatically together and his is just like trickling up a little bit. So relative to the rest of the people that he should be kind of compared against, it's not. But yeah, come on, let's give Checo a break, because we on this podcast, you know, we criticize him when he doesn't do so well. And so far, 2 second places behind the unstoppable Max Verstappen. Qualifying still clearly a weakness, and I think that will trip him up when we go to other tracks where maybe overtaking is a bit more difficult. But yeah, as things stand, I think the stock's slightly up. Do you agree? Well,
I do agree. I was actually going to say up just in general. I mean, you gave him kind of the slight up, so a little bit maybe more hard on him than I would have been. But why do you think that there is such a difference between what we see on race days compared to qualifying?
So that's a really good question. I feel like that car is just so good on its tires that once they get into a race situation, they're able to extract extra performance from the tires over a long run that other teams can't do. The tire performance just doesn't drop off in the same way. But over a single lap, you know, when everything is on the line, I feel like Checo is just not a naturally gifted driver again, everything out. And you have to be so confident with the car, especially somewhere like Jeddah. You have to be so confident that it's going to do what you expect. And whereas someone like Leclerc, I think almost every corner, it looks like he's taken a massive risk. But in his mind, he knows that he's going to come out of it pointing the right way. Well, kind of 95% of the time, at least. Whereas with Checo, it just seems like that extra little bit of confidence he needs isn't there. But we see this quite often in F1, where you have cars which are very good over a single lap, but can't repeat it over multiple laps. And part of it is to do with the tires. Part of it is to do with the way the dynamics of the car change when you put a lot of fuel in it. Of course, that's about with a full race load, that's like 110 kilos. So, you know, it does change the dynamics of the car. And clearly the Red Bull, through everything that they've done on that car, all the finessing they've done to get it to where it is this year, is just such a polished machine that it's capable of just having that extra bit in the race that other teams don't have.
I think you could have made that case or said the same thing about Ferrari a year ago. Like Charles Leclerc had lightning pace on quali day, right? One lap pace. And then when they'd get into the race, it just kind of lost it, which was, I know, frustrating for Ferrari fans. That's interesting. I feel like, you know, that's a talking point we've been discussing for a long, long time with Sergio of, you know, doesn't qualify very well, but then he seems to race better. So interesting storyline to follow. Okay, I don't know if we just put this as a whole team, Alpine, or if we just look at the two drivers. I'm gonna lump it all together. Alpine, Esteban Ocon, and Pierre Gasly. I would imagine you'd be selling all of your stock at this point in time. Sorry, Ryan Reynolds and his counterpart McElhinney, or
yeah,
the new investors.
And also Rory McIlroy and Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua was in Saudi Arabia as well. He had a victory on the Friday night, and then went to watch his Alpine team struggle again. If we're talking about the team, way down to the point that I think if you still had stock in this team, you'd just ride it out. You're like, it can't get any worse. Like, if I sell now and they bounce back up, then I'm going to, you know, be kicking myself. So yeah, certainly with the level you may have invested in previously. The two drivers, I think, unfortunately, even though it's not their fault and they haven't really done a huge amount wrong, like, I don't think they're driving particularly badly in the first two races, but just by the very nature of when you become a back marker team, everybody loses a little bit of interest and it's so much harder to prove that you're doing a great job. You know, a driver could have their absolute best race. You know, Esteban Ocon could have had, I don't think he did, but in Australia, he could have the best race of his career and still finish 13th and no one's ever going to notice.
Yeah.
But in terms of like his consistency or what he was able to do with the car, or even, you know, how much quicker he is than Gasly, like no one's going to really be paying enough attention. So just by being a part of that team, those two drivers at a critical time in both their careers, because they both feel like they're, you know, at these kind of these peak moments where they're, you know, they need to make the right decision with the next move if they make a move, or they need to be convinced that Alpine is the right place to stay if they stay. And I think both of them at the moment, you know, it's going to be tough to say to a rival team, look, I'm performing the best I ever have, when you have 0 points and, you know, you're struggling to get out of Q1. It just doesn't look good, even if it's not their fault.
I can't imagine how frustrating that has to be as a driver who feels fully capable, normally fully confident in their abilities to drive. Whereas in other sports, it's just you, right? Like a basketball player, football player, you have to go out and do the job. You have to go and play. But you're also relying in this sport on a machine, on a car. And if that doesn't provide you what you need to be able to win, to be able to compete for podiums, I can't imagine that dynamic as an athlete in Formula One, because it doesn't compare to other sports across the world in terms of what you're dealing with. There's no depending on equipment to the degree of a Formula One driver.
That's absolutely right. And also, you know, you could say, well, surely if they completely outperform their car, they'd, you know, score a point or whatever, and people would recognize it. And yeah, I guess, you know, that does happen occasionally when a driver, you know, who is in a backmarker car, you know, gets a point, then people do stand up and take notice. But the other reality of all that is also that it's just your confidence when these drivers are attacking a qualifying lap, especially, again, somewhere like Jeddah, the walls are so close. But any track really where the margin for error is small, and, you know, if they're heading for a corner and they're thinking, can I hit the brakes where I know personally, like, or I know, like, that's where I should be hitting the brakes, but can I trust the car to do what I tell it to do, you know, after years and years and years of perhaps having cars that would kind of go with you and stick with you. If you all of a sudden have a rear end that threatens to just spit you into the wall every time you go into a corner, it affects the driver's confidence. And from there, it can be a downward spiral. And look, we even saw that in the case of Checo last year, you know, Red Bull, clearly the best car on the grid by some margin. But as soon as he lost his confidence, it was so hard to get it back. So you not only have that fact that the car is not giving you the result that you deserve compared to your rivals, but also it's not giving you the confidence you need to push yourself and extend yourself as well. So yeah, tough time for both those guys.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Would you buy or sell Carlos Sainz's current stock? Is it up or down?
So Carlos Sainz, I mean, it's after Bahrain, it was massively up. And I don't think I can sell based on a burst appendix. Like, I think that's too harsh. Well, I don't know if it was burst, but an inflamed appendix. So, I mean, yeah, the stock in his appendix is...
you don't need that organ, okay? He's going to be fine.
Now look, Carlos... also, I'll tell you what was impressive about Carlos is the fact that he turned up on race day and looked incredibly fragile as he walked from the hospitality to the garage. But he made sure he was there, which I think, you know, the day after an operation is quite exceptional. It shows a determination that I think we all knew he had. I mean, you can say what you want about whether Carlos is on the very same level as, say, Charles Leclerc on a qualifying lap or Max Verstappen over a race stint or whatever, you know, probably he's not quite on their level, you could argue. But in terms of determination and just grittiness to get the job done, like, he's always been right up there. And I think that was a hell of a show of determination. I still have my appendix. I don't know about you, Katie. I don't know if you've been through that. But I can imagine it's not the kind of thing where you'd want to be getting
the
in the car.
Up and moving. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, remember, he was in the car the day before he had the operation as well, which is pretty crazy. So, and it was clearly unwell, mm-hmm. and was, you know, going around that track like that. Yeah. Incredible.
I think it speaks to his character too, because this is a guy who's just told, hey, you're not going to have a seat next year because we're bringing in Lewis Hamilton. So, you know, you're not going to be with this team, this group of people moving forward, but to still show that commitment to want to get back as soon as you've wrapped up, you know, post-surgery, I think says a lot about his character as a person. Definitely.
Completely agree.
Okay. Nico Hülkenberg, up or down?
I'd say up. I think Nico, on a number of occasions last year, showed how good he can be over a qualifying lap. But again, it was that thing of the car letting him down. He'd get into a race and the car would just eat its tires. And what can you do in that situation? You know, there was very little he could do to drive around it. So I think now that he's got everything in it in the right place with that Haas, that's, like I said, you know, in that bottom five group, but when it's driven on the limit towards the front of that bottom five, I think he's showing, what a great driver he is. And obviously the point in Saudi was some reward. Huge for that team and huge for him. And Hülkenberg's always been a tough one to place, isn't he? Because you always feel like there was a huge amount of potential there, unrealized potential. But then he has like the statistic of being the driver with the most races, but no podium. I think that's right. Either way, he hasn't had a podium in his career. And you think, for a guy who's been around that long, and you know, had that history, like how has that happened, and is there something missing there? But yeah, I think if he's going to be around next year, it will be performances like Saudi that keep him there.
Okay, I'm gonna let two together and go with a team here. VCARB, Daniel Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda, who have had an interesting start, to say the least, to this 2024 season. Do you think that those two drivers' stock is up or down?
Okay, I'm going to duck a bullet and just send that straight back to you, because I feel like I've answered all of them. I'll give you my opinion afterwards, but you go first.
They have to be down, right? I mean, I think that we've seen two poor performances by not only both of them in two races, but I think Yuki continues to show immaturity, right, in the way that he handles certain situations. You know, obviously Max Verstappen gets angry. They all get angry at certain points in races, right, when they don't feel like something fair has taken place or something happens out of their control. But I feel like we keep going back and back many times to Yuki's radio messages where he kind of loses it. He sees red, right, is what we would say. And so, I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and like I feel like he was aware of that almost to a level that was a bit surprising in Saudi. So in Saudi, he gave like this relatively calm for Yuki message, but it was almost like overcompensating a bit. It's like, come on, you can still get angry at stuff, just not at your teammate who was just, you know, kind of seeing through a team order that came from the pit wall in Bahrain. So yeah, I think Yuki, the potential's there. Like, and I'd say Yuki's stock is still slightly higher than Daniel's, because ultimately, even if these guys can be a bit hot-headed and stuff at times, it's the performance that matters. And really, I think for Daniel to make the step that he wants to make, which is up to Red Bull next year in place of Sergio Perez, he needs to outperform Tsunoda over the course of this year quite convincingly. And so far, that hasn't happened. The reason I wanted to dodge that bullet is because Nate Saunders, who, as we mentioned at the start, isn't on this podcast, was dubbed on another podcast that we did with our friend Tim Haraney from TSN as the president of Rick Nation. So, I didn't know. The president of Rick Nation. So Rick Nation being like, I guess, all Ricardo fans, and he's the president of them. So I have a flight of like 24 hours to get to Australia with Nate, probably certainly in the same cabin. And I didn't want to upset him too much by putting Daniel Ricciardo's stock down. But yeah, I feel like Ricciardo, he needs to recover from here.
He certainly does. Especially, it's all about making that jump, right? Because you don't want to say somebody's on the back half of their career, but we know that the back half of his career, at least for the last few years, have been very traumatic. I mean, there's been a lot of turmoil, and his stock for a long period of time was going down, and then he got, you know, a second chance with Red Bull. Well, Red Bull as a marketing guy, and then obviously he got the seat, you know, back half of last year. So I don't know, you hope for him, as engaging as he is, as friendly as he is, you know, they're all good people, so you wish the best for him, but you know, results matter.
Yeah, I think he's got it in him as well. That's the thing, like with Ricciardo, I think the potential is there. And I also I believe that Yuki is actually a pretty quick driver. So while I think for Daniel to get that Red Bull seat, he kind of has to really beat Yuki, you know, pretty comprehensively. I think just to be on the grid and to be considered like a genuine prospect, you know, beating Yuki by a small margin would be enough. But yeah, it's a fascinating one to follow. And again, with all those Red Bull politics further up, I mean, Red Bull aren't going to be, you know, cutting ties with any drivers too soon, because we know how ruthless they can be. But when they're not sure about Max's future because of the ongoing kind of disagreements at the top, especially between Max's father, Jos, and Christian, and how that all plays out. Again, I think we still need a bit of time to figure out exactly what's going to happen. But also Checo, yeah, like we said at the start, stock slightly up, but it's still not convincingly as a number two driver, I don't think. So I think Red Bull are going to be, you know, keep an eye on all of them and keeping their options open as late as they can into the season.
Okay, last one for you. Lance Stroll, son of, I'm just kidding. Lance Stroll, he finished 10th in Bahrain for points. DNF in Jeddah. Fernando Alonso, just so you have the information, which I know you already know, but for our listeners and viewers, Fernando Alonso finished 9th in Bahrain, if I remember correctly. Right. And then he finished 5th in Jeddah. Just so you have the comparison, up or down for Lance Stroll?
Well, in Lawrence Stroll's eyes, the stock is always high. And there's a guy who knows how to make a good business decision. So maybe I shouldn't criticize.
Most of the time, yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's like the Bahrain result was fine for Lance. It was fine. And actually, his performance in that race was good. Like, there was a point part of the way through where he was ahead of Fernando. And of course, that was because Fernando had massively offset his own pit stop to try and take advantage of anything that happened ahead. But at that point, you know, his pace was good. Better than Fernando's because of the tire difference. And, you know, even when Fernando came back on and passed him, you know, he wasn't dreadful at the end of that race. So I kind of felt like, right, first race, he's finished one place behind Fernando. Can't have an argument about that. You want to give him the benefit of the doubt. But then, you know, you go into Saudi, qualified 10th, I believe, and then had the accident relatively early in the race. And I don't know. Like, I mean, he has had a particularly bad record at Saudi, some of it down to bad luck, some of it down to errors, but yeah, certainly not his circuit. So I mean, I think you have to say that Lance's stock on the base of the two races is down, but I think when you're competing against someone like Fernando Alonso, it's hard to make yourself look good. It really is. And so yeah, we'll have to see where it goes over the next few races, but yeah, it's not been the perfect start for Lance, let's say.
Here's three things I know. Your stock is going up. Nate Saunders' stock is clearly going up because he's got a hot date and he's been on SportsCenter and he's not hanging out with us anymore. And I like to say that I'm like more of a blue chip stock. I'm like stable, reliable. I'm not going to make you a ton of money, but I'm not going to lose you a ton of money. Okay.
So a long-term investment, a safe long-term.
I'm a long-term investment. Exactly. Thanks for playing. Thanks for your analysis, as always. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode of Unlapped, so be sure to watch that and check it out. Thanks for watching, as always, guys. Cheers.